Hello again, everyone, wherever you may be, and welcome to the 151st edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your window on the world of Iowa politics, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. If I'm laughing, I have to explain. I've seen Laura Bellin on my monitor, and she's bringing her dog, Sammy, into her lap as we start this program. Laura, welcome.
Yes, I'm sorry. I didn't want Sammy to start barking, so he's here with us. We're both happy to be here.
Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland and her dog, Sammy. All right, Laura, here we are on this week before Christmas, the week before Christmas, and the Iowa caucuses are less than 1 month away. We have plenty of candidate politicking to talk about. Oh, do we have that? Plus a load of new polls. But first, we have to start with something that involved our four Republican congressional members in Iowa and something that will play a role next year during the campaign. The House of Representatives voted last week to start an impeachment inquiry against President Biden, and Iowa's four GOP congressional members voted in favor, Laura.
Yes, it was a straight party line vote in the U.S. House. So it wasn't too surprising. I think this was a bit of an easier vote than if they end up bringing impeachment articles against Biden, because as many members of the House said, including Marionette Miller Meeks of the First District of Iowa, they said this is a way we're going to be able to collect more evidence, and this is a step in the process. And Zach Nunn, who's of the Third District, he said that he was going to be impartial about the outcome, and we'll see what we get. I thought it was interesting that Randy Feenstra, who represents the Fourth District, he seemed to be assuming that they are going to uncover evidence. He said we're one step closer to uncovering the president's involvement in his son's dealings, which surprised me. And then Ashley Hinson of the second district didn't say anything. I couldn't find any public comment anywhere on social media. Her staff didn't respond to my email. So I'm not sure why she wasn't eager to get out there and talk about this. She didn't put it in her weekly email newsletter. So I'm not sure what's going on there. But in any case, right now, all the Iowa members of Congress and also all of the entire Republican caucus in the House is on board with pursuing this inquiry.
At the very least, this is going to be an embarrassment to the president. At the most, it's going to be a distraction and maybe play a role in the campaign.
It could be. But I mean, I also think for some Republicans representing marginal districts, it imperils them a little bit. I mean, we'll see what kind of evidence they come up with. But so far, even some Republican senators, I saw Senator Lindsey Graham said that he hasn't seen any evidence that implicates President Joe Biden. And so, I mean, this is a tough vote. There are quite a few Republican members of the House in districts that Joe Biden carried in 2020.
And one more quick note out of the U.S. House from last week, all Iowa Republican House members voted for the defense policy bill.
And this is the National Defense Authorization Act. So it's not the entire Pentagon budget, but it's a huge spending bill. It always passes every year, usually with strong bipartisan support. This year, there was a bit of a rebellion in the House because the bill did not include anti-abortion riders that some conservatives wanted. And it also included a four-month extension of the what's called FISA, which is federal Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act powers that some conservatives don't like. So there were quite a few members of the Freedom Caucus who voted against this, but the four Iowa members did vote in favor of it. Now, we still have all of the funding bills. When Congress comes back to work in January, there's still a lot of funding bills that they are going to need to work on. Otherwise, we could have a shutdown.
All right, let's get on to the Iowa caucuses. They are rolling. They are roaring toward us a month away now. Where's our theme song? Oh, wait a minute. I'll just hum it. Well, no, I won't. All right, let's get our Capital Week caucus almanac going. Another new poll in Iowa last week by Iowa State University. This one shows of likely GOP caucus goers, Donald Trump, the first choice of 54%. It was 51% in the Des Moines Register poll the week earlier, followed by Ron DeSantis at 17, Nikki Haley at 15. Laura, you and I have been saying for weeks, probably months, we did not, do not, cannot see an opening for any other candidate. This just confirms what we've been saying.
And there just isn't any sign that many Republicans are actively looking for an alternative to Donald Trump. And we just don't see that. We've never seen that in the polling. We continue to not see it. So whether he's at 51% or 54% or 56%, I think that the key story is that even if you put everybody else together, they're still behind Trump. And I watched the rally that he did in Coralville, and he and his supporters who come on stage before he speaks, they are really methodical about explaining to people the nuts and bolts about getting to a caucus, bringing your friends and neighbors to a caucus. So I think he's still, I've said this before, and I still think he has a good chance of outperforming his polling numbers in January.
There were many more new polls by the Des Moines Register last week. We're not going to go over every one of them, just in general terms. Virtually a vast majority of likely GOP caucus goers say that Trump is going to be the most feared by U.S. enemies, that he'd do the best job with the economy, be the strongest leader, keep your family safest. They're confident he can defeat President Biden. It was a very good poll for Donald Trump. That's all there was to it.
It was. And they also asked caucus goers about what do they think about Governor Kim Reynolds and Bob Vanderplaats of the Family Leader endorsing Ron DeSantis. And people don't care. I had a chance to talk to some longtime observers of Iowa politics who have been active in the caucuses since the 1970s. And I asked them, can you think of any time in either party that an endorsement of a presidential candidate made a significant difference in the result of the Iowa caucus? And they said never. It has never happened. I mean, it's nice. Everyone likes to get an endorsement. It's a good media story for a day or two, but it's just not, Iowa caucus goers are not that interested in what political or spiritual leaders say about who they should support.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about spiritual later in this broadcast. But there is a question about Governor Reynolds that I have, and we've talked about this before. Why in the world, she knew what these polls were showing. Why in the world, again, do you think she endorsed Ron DeSantis because it was going to be a loser?
I think that she's long had an affinity for Governor DeSantis and his policies. I think she had a preference. We've discussed her senior, former chief of staff, senior political advisor, Ryan Koopmans, went to work for the super PAC that's supporting DeSantis in the spring. And I think that she just wanted to see, I think she probably believed that maybe she could be influential because she is very popular in Republican circles. But I have yet to find anyone in either party who thinks this was a smart move for her. And I'm curious to see whether it's going to affect her ability to get some things through the Iowa legislature. Remember that although more than 40 Republican legislators have endorsed Ron DeSantis, about 20 have endorsed Donald Trump, and they are regularly showing up at his rallies. And I just wonder if there's going to be some bad blood that goes beyond January 15th.
One more note from the polls last week. One of the questions found that most GOP likely caucus goers say Trump's statements about looking into alternatives to Obamacare and about authorizing raids, camps, and deportations to deal with immigration make them more likely to vote for Trump. And Trump, of course, as we know, this past weekend made some wild allegations on the campaign trail, not in Iowa. He's getting out there with some strange and very aggressive statements.
He is. And he is in Iowa. He repeats at all of his rallies. He talks about how he's the only one who can prevent World War III. Other people who introduce him talk about how he's the one who can prevent World War III. And it's something that gets a strong response from the audience. And I mean, I go back to 2015, the beginning of 2015, Trump's favorable numbers with Iowa Republicans were terrible. He had higher unfavorable than favorable numbers, even as late as June of 2015. And in the summer of 2015, he launched his campaign. He started talking about immigration and the so-called Mexican judge he didn't like, and lots of inflammatory statements. And by August of 2015, his favorable numbers had completely flipped around with Iowa Republican voters. And so he, even though he didn't win the caucuses in 2016, we've never had any evidence that these incendiary statements from Trump are a problem for him with Iowa Republican caucus goers.
And Trump also ratcheted up his criticism of the governor, continuing to take credit for her reelection and mocking her as the least popular governor in America. He has a long memory, and he's probably not going to forget what Kim Reynolds has done during this campaign cycle.
It's quite repetitive, honestly. And at his rallies, he goes through this whole big routine about Ron DeSantis and who he calls DeSanctus sometimes, DeSanctimonious, how he helped him. He would never have been elected in 2018 without me. But then he was disloyal. He talks about Nikki Haley, how she used to say she would never run against him and she's disloyal. So he has a thing about loyalty. And he talks about how he claims that he helped Governor Kim Reynolds. I don't know many people who believe that he was responsible for Kim Reynolds being elected governor in 2018. But certainly he's pushing that line of argument and strongly implying that she was disloyal for not endorsing him. I mean, that it's a very simplistic transactional view of politics. And I thought Ron DeSantis was trying to parry that last week by saying, hey, you know, you don't have to kiss my ring or kiss Trump's ring. And I'm not, there are a lot of good Republicans who aren't endorsing me and I'm not going to trash them. But the thing is, that is just not, Republican voters aren't bothered by that side of Donald Trump's personality.
So what's a guy to do if you're Ron DeSantis? You're trailing 54-17%. You got a month to go. Well, you obviously have to claim that the polls are not accurate, which is exactly what he did last week. He claimed the Des Moines Register poll is not accurate. In fact, he said it's never accurate. Well, the Des Moines Register investigated and found, Ron, that's just not true.
Yeah, I mean, Ann Seltzer, who's the longtime pollster for the Register, she's one of the best in the business. And she's had some misses. She did see Trump winning the 2016 caucuses. He ended up coming in second to Ted Cruz. But she's never had a miss by 30 points. Look, and whenever a candidate starts talking about how the only poll that matters is the one on caucus night or election day, that's somebody who's losing. I mean, we've seen that for decades in the Iowa caucuses.
Speaking of a guy who's losing, Vivek Ramaswamy last week, he went even crazier about conspiracy theories. He said sometimes the truth is uncomfortable. He has claimed that the January 6, 2021 riot at the U.S. Capitol looks like an inside job, that the 2020 election was stolen from Trump, and that the U.S. government lied to us for 20 years about Saudi Arabia's involvement in 9/11. He is apparently way out there right now, Laura.
Yeah, you know, he's very attention-seeking. I mean, I think that his shock jock style campaign rhetoric, it got him noticed enough to get high enough in the polls to qualify for the televised debate. But now he's hitting a wall because he's not polling high enough to qualify for the debates they're going to have in January. And he's not gaining. He's stuck at this 4%, 5% level. And most of the people who like what he's saying are people who are going to support Donald Trump. So I see him as angling for a position in the Trump administration, honestly. I think when he's doubling down on January 6th being an inside job, that's because he wrote, I think it was a Wall Street Journal op-ed, and he wrote in one of his books, he was critical of Donald Trump after the 2020 election. And I think he's trying to walk that back now because he's ingratiating himself with the person who's going to be the nominee.
Meanwhile, there was a hoo-ha last week, and I love that word, hoo-ha, brief hoo-ha. Is Vivek Ramaswamy going to run as a libertarian? What do you think?
Well, he certainly met with Iowa libertarians, but I thought people really jumped the gun on that and saying, oh, wow, you know, he's thinking about running as a libertarian. My read on that was that he was reaching out to Iowa libertarians because he was thinking of them as a network who might show up for him and caucus for him on January 15th. I mean, he's clearly not making any headway. He doesn't have much of a ground game here. He's done a lot of events around the state, but he doesn't seem to have a lot of committed caucus goers. So I don't think this is going anywhere. The Libertarian Party has many different candidates who are thinking about running for president, and it's very far-fetched to think that they would consider nominating Ramaswamy.
One more note on this. Haley and DeSantis have both confirmed they're going to take part in that CNN debate on January 10th in Iowa. I don't really know why there is a debate on January 10th in Iowa.
Well, there usually, traditionally, there is a debate the week before the Iowa caucuses somewhere, usually in Des Moines. It's going to be at Drake University this time. Trump, by the way, skipped the debate before the 2016 caucuses. He skipped that debate. And it was perceived that maybe that hurt him a little bit in that race. But he's so far ahead right now that none of these debates matter.
That's it. That's what I was getting to. All right. There was some news that the Democrats made last week. Lest you think we only talk about Republicans. That is not true. The Democrats are also going to caucus on Monday night, January 15th, just as the Republicans will. And they released the sites of their caucuses.
Yes. And since this is really almost an off-year caucus for Democrats, because there's no real serious competition for the presidential nomination. So remember, it's very important for people who want to participate in their Democratic caucus on January 15th to look, not assume that it's going to be at your regular polling place, because most likely it's not going to be. So for instance, in Story County, I think all of the precincts in Story County are going to be meeting at Ames High School for Democrats. So it's really important. They're consolidating because turnout is expected to be extremely low. And remember, they're not doing any kind of presidential preference at the Democratic caucuses. They're just conducting party business. So that's electing central committee members, members to other committees, considering platform resolutions and things like that, county convention delegates, and so on. So it is something, and some of those locations may change as we get closer to January 15th.
And one more quick note, it appears that Iowa State University Democrats have patched things up with the state party over Israel.
Yes. I mean, I think everybody overreacted a little bit. There was the dust up that we talked about in October, where the university, there were some Democrats at the University of Iowa who posted something on social media, and the state party chair, Rita Hart, issued a press release condemning their post, which I think many Democrats viewed as an overreaction on her part. And then it led the ISU Democrats to say, well, they don't want to be involved with the state party that's cracking down on college activists. So I think everybody's tried to calm down and have some dialogue and talk about areas that they can work together. It's going to be really important for Democrats in Iowa to have strong college student networks, because getting college students out to vote is really critically important, as we see in most polls that the college student vote strongly favors Democrats.
It is 15 and a half minutes after the hour, and this is KHY's Capital Week with Laura Bellin, Samuel Bellin, and me, Dennis Hart. This is your one-stop source, Sammy's the dog, by the way, for everything political going on in Iowa. We're here every week at this time to keep you updated on what's taking place inside and around the Golden Dome. That's why I was laughing off the top of the show. I saw Sammy being put into Laura's lap. I wasn't losing it on this end. I haven't lost it yet. Anyway, let's go on with the rest of the show, Laura. The U.S. Supreme Court made a big decision to talk about, to take up a dispute over that medication used in the most common form of abortion. Now, this is going to impact millions of women.
Yeah. So mifepristone, some people may remember, it used to be called RU486. This is the drug that is used in most abortions now. It is the most effective form of abortion that is not procedural, that's medical. And there is a lawsuit that was filed in Amarillo, Texas, specifically to get it in the courtroom of a particular federal judge who was known to be a strong opponent of abortion. And so he tried to put a halt to the distribution of mifepristone nationwide, saying that the FDA approval of the drug was improperly done 23 years ago. So the U.S. Supreme Court, it's not clear how much they're going to decide of the merits for the case. They have a lot of options here. And one thing they could do is just say that the plaintiffs don't have standing to challenge this. Or they could say that the time limit for challenging the FDA approval of mifepristone has passed. But one possibility is that they could, without excluding the drug from use entirely, they could disallow a more recent FDA decision to allow things like mifepristone to be sent through the mail and other types of policies, federal policies that made the drug more available. And that could be very impactful, particularly for women living in states that have already banned abortion, because if you can't send abortion medications through the mail, that's a huge impediment.
As I said off the top, this is our 151st show. We're really nearing the end of our third year. We never have guests on this show, but right now, and we're not inviting him, but he's going to be talked about right now, Satan. That's right. We're talking Satan. Now you say, well, Dennis and Laura and Sammy, have you guys gone crazy? Well, it seems as if to us, a lot of people have gone crazy. I'll set this up, but it's got so many layers, Laura. It's a great story, except, you know, it's crazy. An Eastern Iowa lawmaker called on Governor Reynolds last week to remove a satanic display the state capitol, Representative Brad Sherman. He said that putting that display there is unconstitutional. He wanted a new law to clear the way for displaying the Ten Commandments in all state buildings. Okay, this ignited it, and it just kept getting higher and higher with the flames all week. Laura, take it from there.
This became a massive story on social media because some conservative influencers with national followings were sharing images and pictures and outrage about this. First, I want to let people understand that groups are able to apply to the Department of Administrative Services for a display during the holiday season. It's a long-standing thing. You file an application. They usually approve it. But this was not a state-sanctioned display. This was a group calling themselves the Satanic Temple. They actually don't worship Satan, my understanding. I think that most people would consider their views to be more humanistic. But if you went to the Capitol, as I did last week, to see what the fuss was all about, in the middle of a rotunda, very large Christmas tree, decorated in a secular way, but huge Christmas tree. Okay, so that is the official state's decoration, and everybody knows that this is the holiday season. Then over by the stairway, there were four displays. There was a nativity scene. There was something by Iowa Atheists and Freethinkers. There was something by the Freedom From Religion group. And then there was this satanic temple display that was clearly designed to be inflammatory. And they really got what they were looking for. I think a massive amount of publicity and a dissent. I mean, you mentioned State Representative Brant Sherman. He's a first-term Republican from Eastern Iowa who said that this thing should not be allowed. But there was also another Republican who represents the Newton area, John Dunwell, who said, well, I find this very offensive, but we can't have the government involved in regulating religion, and it's not illegal, and we should just pray about it, and we should try to lead people to the Christian viewpoint, but without tearing down this display.
So Governor Reynolds had to do something, and she issued a statement about it. She said she found the display absolutely objectionable. Those are her words. She also said that in a free society, the best response to objectionable speech is more speech. She asked Iowans to pray over the Capitol building. All right.
Well, and she also, in that statement, encouraged people to look at the nativity scene, which is on display. Again, not an official state-sanctioned display, but it's one that is out there. And she said that that's the true reason for the season. So honestly, you could view her statement as almost endorsing Christianity, which she's really not supposed to do in her official capacity.
Well, that could have calmed it down, but of course it did not, because last Thursday, satanic leaders reported that their display had been damaged beyond repair, vandalized. And who did it turn out to have done it? A former congressional candidate from Mississippi, Michael Cassidy. Take it from there.
Yes. As I said, this was getting a lot of traction on conservative social media. And this person in Mississippi had seen this. He was outraged and he drove all the way up to Iowa to destroy this. And then he started fundraising immediately. So he's raised a lot of money for his legal defense because he's going to be charged with some kind of vandalism related offense. I mean, you're really not supposed to, you're not supposed to tear down public displays in the Capitol. But really, I think that if people had ignored this display, hardly anybody would have even noticed that it existed. There is not a lot of foot traffic inside the Capitol Rotunda in December. So this was something that really created just a huge firestorm that I didn't see a lot of logic for.
So that could have calmed it down, but no, no, no. Ron DeSantis had to jump in, the presidential candidate. He blamed, you got to love this, Donald Trump. Yes, Donald Trump for the satanic temple display. Now we're and DeSantis says he's going to raise money to help this guy Cassidy in his legal expenses. It's just getting crazy.
Well, Ron DeSantis's comments didn't make a lot of sense because he said something like, I wouldn't consider this a real religion because this isn't something the founding fathers would have considered a religion. And that's really not how it works, right? The First Amendment says the government is not supposed to establish a religion. It doesn't say that only religions that the founders would have understood are somehow legitimate. So that didn't make a lot of sense. I mean, I don't know that this had anything to do with whatever the Trump administration IRS did. The Iowa Department of Administrative Services, they are the ones who process the applications for displays inside the Iowa State Capitol. So I really don't think it had anything to do with the IRS. And it, to me, it looked a little bit desperate for DeSantis to start talking in that direction.
We're almost done with Satan. Satan's almost, we're going to cast him out, but there's one more thing and then we're done. The Trump campaign, of course, couldn't let that lie, what DeSantis was saying. So they said DeSantis does not even own his own Bible. Now, I have no idea how they know this.
Well, I think that he swore when he was sworn in as governor, I think he used his own Bible. So I don't know where. I mean, the Trump campaign, they love insulting and ridiculing Ron DeSantis. And so they didn't seem concerned about this at all.
That is the first and last time I hope we talk about Satan on this broadcast. Laura, we're done. Would you agree with that?
I agree.
All right. There was some really more serious news among them. And this was a big story. I'm not sure it got a big enough play. State Senate Republicans rejected a request by state Democratic lawmakers to investigate the state's nursing homes. There are big problems in Iowa's nursing homes. More than a couple of dozen have shut down since the beginning of the year. Iowa is 49th in the nation for the number of nursing home inspectors per capita. There are troubles there, but Senate Republicans don't want to look into it.
Yes, and the Clark Kaufman of Iowa Capital Dispatch has just done tremendous reporting on the nursing home problems. He's been covering nursing homes since the 1990s, and he just last week reported a really appalling story about a woman who had alleged that she had been raped by a staff member, and the nursing home ended up evicting her and leaving her in a homeless shelter. So it was a real scandal. I think that was what prompted the press conference last week that called for an oversight committee investigation. The Iowa Senate Government Oversight Committee has not held a hearing in about 4 years. They just haven't met to discuss any issues of concern about state government at all. And so it wasn't surprising to me that the chair of that committee, who is also the Iowa Senate president, Amy Sinclair, she said that she's not interested in calling a hearing. And the Democratic lawmakers, they're not in a position to schedule a hearing. They can only ask the majority party to do that. But there really are serious problems with nursing homes. It's particularly affecting nursing homes in rural Iowa. And I think this is going to be a hot topic during the Iowa legislature session next year, even if there are no oversight committee hearings about it.
All right, let's move on to the Revenue Estimating Committee. The conference said this week or last week that the state's expected revenue in the next fiscal year is going to drop. And there's absolutely no surprise about this. We've been talking about this.
That's right. This is as the tax cuts that the Republican-controlled legislature approved in 2022, and even some of the ones from 2018 are still phasing in, but especially the package that created the flat tax, that put us on the path for a flat tax. As that continues to phase in, it's entirely expected that state revenue would go down. And so that's what we're seeing. Even though the economy seems to be fairly strong, state revenue is going to go down. So predictably, we saw Republican politicians hailing this and saying, this means we have plenty of room to cut taxes more. And then Democrats in the Iowa House and Senate were saying, this shows that we can't afford these tax cuts that largely benefit wealthy Iowans and that we need to invest in priorities that would help regular Iowans.
We have about 3 minutes left, and I want to get to a couple of stories, including your Heartland exclusive that you put up there, I believe, today. And the headline is, after a budget boost, the governor gave senior staff raises. Why don't you get into that?
So just to, we were discussed this in the spring, but just so that people recall, the governor's office budget was increased by about 21%. A lot of state government agencies are on status quo budgets or very small increases. The governor's office got a huge budget increase, and they didn't exactly say what they were going to do with the money. But one thing that they said was that they wanted to be able to recruit and retain talented staff. And so I was on the lookout to see whether they were going to give some of the staff big raises. And normally I've requested salary records periodically for a number of years. And what you usually see in state government is that employees get a little bit of a raise at the beginning of July with the beginning of the new fiscal year. And then that's usually their salary, unless they get some kind of a big promotion or their job duties change in a significant way. But what I learned from this batch of records that I received a couple of weeks ago is that the governor's staff, everybody on the staff got a 3% raise at the beginning of July. That's normal. Then in September, seven people got very significant raises, and four of them got raises between 13 and 17%. And I just haven't seen that. I've talked to people who have worked in government. It's just not something you see when somebody's job duties haven't changed. That kind of a huge raise just doesn't happen, especially in the middle of the fiscal year. So the governor's office budget, I mean, the governor has the ability to set salaries at whatever level she wants, and that's what we're seeing. The governor's staff had sent me, without getting too much into the details of the numbers, they had sent me a chart purporting to claim that these staffers were underpaid, and that's why they needed to bring their salaries up. And really, the comparisons didn't make a lot of sense, because most of the staff who got these large raises, the communications director, the senior legal counsel, the chief of staff, they already were making comparable to what their counterparts were making in other states. And many of those states have higher costs of living than the Des Moines area. And so really, there's no logic to these very large raises. I should say the governor herself has a fixed salary at $130,000, so she never gets a raise under state law.
It's a good story. It's on Bleeding Heartland. You can access it tonight. One more quick note. We have a minute left. Iowa House District 48 GOP incumbent Phil Thompson of Boone, he's not going to seek re-election.
Yeah, and he's young. I mean, it's interesting. There have been a lot of Iowa House Republican retirements the last few cycles, and there are several ones this year. Dave Dio, who represents part of Story County, is also not seeking re-election. But Phil Thompson, I mean, this is only his third term, so I was a little bit surprised that he wasn't leaving, but my contacts in Boone County were not surprised. So I think locally, this was had been known for a while.
And very quickly, a former GOP House member is going to run again as a Democrat.
So Andy McKean, he served in the Iowa Senate for a while in the 80s and 90s. He then took some time off. He served as a Jones County supervisor. He came back to the legislature in 2016 as a Republican, and he made national news in 2019 when he left the Republican Party over his opposition to some of the things President Trump was doing. He lost his 2020 reelection bid running as a Democrat, and he is going to take on the Republican who beat him in that race, Steve Bradley. Steve Bradley, by the way, is a Trump endorser. He has appeared at several of Trump's rallies, and so I wouldn't be surprised to see Trump getting involved in that race.
And we're out of time. Laura, have a great Christmas week.
Oh, yeah, you too. And I hope that everyone stays safe in this very cold weather.
The views and opinions expressed here, will remind you, did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or Satan or its staff. Laura and I will be back here in the same time slot next week. And as usual, we'll talk about everything interesting or important or even entertaining. Yeah, there was some of that that takes place in Iowa politics. And as always, we hope you can join us. Sammy the dog will be here with us as well. We are going to be here on Christmas night. We hope you can join us. If you can't, there'll be a rerun the following morning. Meanwhile, between now and next time, Christmas night, have a safe, healthy, and extremely happy week. No Satan.